When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guests, well, they've been on our screens for a long time in Made in Chelsea. One is an OG, so it really has been a long time. They are on their journey to become parents, and I'm really excited to talk to them today. It's Ollie and Gareth Locke, the Lock Locks. Lock Locks?
Lock Lock, who's there? Yeah, it's a funny situation.
So technically, yeah, well, I am. I have actually changed my passport. I am Gareth Locke Locke. And you are still Ollie Locke.
I'm still Ollie Locke at the moment, but I do need to change it for birth certificate reasons when the babies are born and stuff.
Yeah, we need to get on.
However, Gareth, actually, the lovely story that Gareth did change his name is a surprise. I'm like, look, I've changed my name. It's wonderful. Look, it's at the proof. It's Locke Locke. And I was like, you know, you spelled Gareth wrong.
No,
so
you
legally,
didn't.
So bad. He changed his name to DeGrasse Locke Locke. And I was like, so now in every other document, it's going to have to be, what have you got any previous names? And it's going to be, yeah, it's Garar Locklock, then Garar Locklock.
So changing your name by Depot, I have my solicitor. I've actually done it for Ollie as well, but I've checked. I have spelled his name one right. So I changed my name at Depot, and I've got terrible eyesight. And I'm doing it late at night thinking, oh, this would be a nice surprise for Oz. And I'm going through on my phone, and then I've got it all through. My solicitor's like, it's all changed, sent me the document over. And then I just sent it to Ollie. He's out with some friends. And he's like, have you seen what you've done? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, look, and it's Guru. So legally, for 2 weeks, my name was Guru Paul Locklock.
To be fair, I think I prefer it to Gareth, if I'm honest.
Oh, thanks.
It may sound very exotic.
Doesn't it?
Guru.
I was the only person in the world named Guru. And then basically now on documents where it says previous names, I have to put Gareth Paul Locke, Guru Paul Locklock. And now Gareth Paul Locke Locke.
So yes, legally, and by the end, names. We will be Locke Locks.
Yeah.
Nice.
I just have many other names now. Man of many names.
I mean, it's very rare to meet and fall in love with someone who has the same surname as you.
I know, we did have to do biological tests.
Do you remember going to get our wedding certificate, and they were like, are you related? And we were like, no, we're not. And they were like, we have to check.
Well, they didn't check very hard, did
but also,
they?
It should go on more than a surname,
yes,
surely.
It should, probably.
Everyone should just have blood tests if that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, are you sure? Yeah, we're not related. Okay, that was good enough for them, really, wasn't it? We could be. Let's not do 23andMe.
Yeah, just in case.
Just in case.
I've done it. You don't do it. My half-brother, he's living in London in Chelsea. Ollie, great.
So what were your childhoods like? Did you grow up in Chelsea?
No, I'm a massive fraud. I grew up in Southampton. And
well, that's quite a change.
And actually, I'm going to be really naughty and say the only time I've ever lived in Chelsea is the last 3 weeks when we moved to Chelsea. But I've lived in Fulham for the last 20 years nearly.
Really?
Yeah, so made in Fulham, really. It's
I was born in London, but then we moved out when I was really young. But I've always been in London, in and out.
And actually, secretly, he's an Essex boy.
Are you? Whereabouts?
Essex,
I'm an Essex girl. So
I'm Dedham.
But you were
Colchester.
Born in Chelsea. Ah, Chelsea.
Whereabouts are you from?
Ingatestone.
You're a bit too close to London, near Margaretting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Ingatestone. It's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
There's a really
nice
good antique shop there. I'm showing my age.
That's a gay thing to say.
That's a really gay thing to say. I love antiquing. What can I say?
That's fine. What were your childhoods like?
Mine was wonderful, I must admit. I was so lucky. I had the most wonderful parents and a wonderful sister. And my parents broke up when I was very young. I was about eight, but it didn't affect me. I think I was a young kid that went, oh, two houses, two presents at Christmas, et cetera, et cetera. And that was enough for me. And I think I was on that age that I was about eight. So I think I was fine. But yeah, I had a wonderful childhood, really. I did go to boarding school at between 8 and 10. I can't remember when.
Oh, really?
So I was at boarding school since from very young. So, but I loved it. I was with my friends. There were struggles, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was always quite fab.
Yeah.
Really.
It's funny, though, isn't it? Because when your children arrive and they get to that age, you know, I wonder if you'll kind of be like, oh, that's so young. And I wonder if it's also a generational thing, whereas, you know, I've got friends who went to boarding school and now that their kids are at that age, they're like, oh, I couldn't imagine doing it.
Gee, I'm with you entirely. I don't think I would want to send them, after spending the amount of money and the amount of time trying to have babies, the last thing I want to do is give them to someone else to bring up.
I mean, I've read Mallory Towers and it sounds so much fun. So I always wanted to go.
Yep. I remember, showing kids and parents, prospective parents, round boarding school and stuff like that. And they were like, so how much like Hogwarts is it? And their kids are just obsessed with Harry Potter. They want to be in Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Hogwarts definitely came out after you went to school.
You didn't.
Try and make yourself seem younger. I never went to boarding school. I did actually lower sixth, but didn't go very well. But both my parents, still together now, my mum's sadly sort of almost gone with Alzheimer's, but my parents, I grew up in a very loving family, very close, got an older brother, had a wonderful idyllic upbringing. And my parents always wanted me around. Like, I wanted to go to boarding school. My mum was like, no, you're staying like near me. So much so that we always used to move. My mum moved to a company close to where the school was. And my dad was a stay-at-home dad. He retired when I was very young.
Really?
Yeah, retired in 94, I think. So he was a stay-at-home dad. So I sort of had the flip reversal. So I had this like powerhouse mother.
Yeah.
So this real inspiration. So I have like this real attraction to like strong sort of powerful females.
Is that why you married me?
Yeah, exactly.
Clearly.
Thanks so much.
It's the female energy you push off. Most of my friends are like, females in sort of really successful sort of positions who are driven and motivated. Yeah. It's something I really resonate with because that's the upbringing I had. It was like a flip reversal.
Yeah.
And I was always around it. My parents are very open with me and very like honest, open family. So sort of exposed from a lot very young in a very sort of tight nuclear unit, really.
Yeah.
Which is fun, which hopefully we're going to recreate.
Did those relationships that you had with your parents and with yours, did they make you think ahead to you growing up and starting your own families?
Interesting you say that, because I think up until about 5 to 10 years ago kind of thing, I think that's the first time when we ever could look forward to having children because of legalities, etc. And so I always would watch my best friend's wedding or whatever like that, and I would think, well, I'll be Rupert Everett. I'll be that fun uncle that always has dinner parties and has loads of disposable income and sits there travelling the world. And that was what I thought my position was going to be like. I think once it became slightly more normalised that gay guys could have children, I think I went, there's a switch here. And for where my mind has always been, that this wasn't going to be a possibility. You had to open your mind and kind of learn in a different way that you ever thought before.
Mm.
And so then I go, okay, what kind of parent do I want to be? So that's the journey that I think we have been on for the last 3 or 4 years is trying to going through IVF and stuff and realizing what we are going to be like and how we are going to be as parents.
Yeah, I think I was always open to being a parent. Like, it's always something that I envisaged for myself, whether it was adoption or IVF, like the route we've taken. You actually told me on camera, didn't you? We were filming Chelsea and he was like, I think I actually want to have kids. Because it's something I'd been like, oh, would you ever be open to it? And Ollie was like, it's a big thing then to have a family. And, your worry shifts because you worry about your kids. Like now, we're 20 weeks.
20 yeah, weeks we're now? 20 weeks.
20 weeks. And we had to have a scan the other day. And every time I'm worrying, they're still in the womb. Like, what's it going to be like when they're out? And, the first 6 months, the first year, the first 2 years, first 20 years, all these worries. What when they get to like 16 and start going out? I'm like, no, you're not going anywhere. My daughter, you're not dating him. Like, all of this. I'm like, I'm already worrying about this and it's only going to amplify. And that was your big worry, wasn't it?
That was, the biggest worry. However, I also want to make sure more than anything, you have to, a lot of people, any advice we could be given, and especially with twins, is someone turned around the other day and said, you can't call them the twins because they are different people.
Yeah, they're individuals.
And I want to make sure that this is not my life. This is their life. And I want them to know that from very early. And they need to make the mistakes and need to make all the choices they want to make. And it's absolutely nothing to do with me. I'll guide you in the best way I possibly can and support you in every way. But this is your little life and you need to make that what you will.
It's such a big shift mentally as well, isn't it? That the idea of you're going about, especially if you didn't think family was going to be on the table, you're going about your life being that person that's just having fun and making the most out of everything. And all of a sudden there's that responsibility that's going to come in and life is going to look and feel and be very, very different.
I think we want to, yes, it obviously will be completely different, but I know that whatever platform we will go on and do, I always know we'll be sharing this journey with everyone.
Yeah.
and there will be some sort of glitter to sparkle up with. And with some humour, with some love, and with some bits, because it's not often you see people from the moment the babies are born to all the nights, all the situations. You are literally, you are going to be involved in our lives in a platform that we will explain another time.
Right, okay.
Everyone's going to see a struggle. I think this is so funny because everyone's like, oh, you don't know what you're letting yourself in for. I was like, we've just been on this 3-year journey to have kids.
And also no one knows what they're letting themselves
in. No.
But you know what I mean? I think, I don't think it matters what your experience is with other children before you have kids. The reality is your emotions, the tiredness, that only affects you when you are in that situation. Mm. And you learn on the job. Everyone learns on the job. No one knows what they're doing until they have a newborn in their arms. And that's absolutely fine. That's part of the
well, I think that's
world
the joy, isn't it?
Yeah.
As well. Like, that's something that you have to learn. And
can't wait. Hate sleep.
Can't
wait. Absolutely brilliant. I'm just going to be like this, you know. I said I went and had some Botox done yesterday, and I was like, I'm going to be back in 6 months a lot. There's going to be, you need to. And she's like, okay, fine. She's like, you'll be fine. I was like, well, and everyone sort of says, when you have twins, you don't know any different.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank God we've started with twins. So if we have a third, it'll be much easier.
I can imagine lots of people around the world right now going, yeah, you wait.
So how did you two meet and when did you first start talking about the future and families?
So we met, would you believe, should we show our age slightly, in China White's nightclub.
Wow.
Ollie's older than me, FYI. Ollie's older than me.
That is. Do you remember when that was?
It was November 2009 on Air Street when you pulled up in Freelander with long hair and probably something the Union Jack on it, fluttering around with almost way too much fake tan on.
That sounds about right. So yeah, that would have been it. And we were both involved in a fashion show of a friend of ours, Jade Holland Cooper, who has a brand called Holland Cooper. And she's married to the owner of Superdry. So they're this fabulous powerhouse down in the Cotswolds who are great friends of ours. Now, they always have this fabulous Cheltenham Gold Cup weekend where they invite lots of famous, wonderful people around them. But we've known them for so long. I was her first ever employee, went to university with her. Gareth was managing director of the company. And we all went down, and it was a Saturday afternoon after the racing. And there was no alcohol involved whatsoever. And I remember sitting, it was snowing outside, and I remember sitting by the fire, talking in their fabulous kitchen. And I remember about half an hour into it, it went better and better. And I was like, I knew this guy for such a long time, but I'd never noticed who was standing in front of me. Suddenly the dog had terrible diarrhea,
oh my God.
If I remember. And for some reason you got out of your, you got that and cleaned it all up, which I found hilarious.
Yeah, because this dog was basically a horse. And this room was enormous, but the smell was quickly filling the room.
So
Ollie was enjoying sitting by the fire so much, I was like, I'm going to be the hero here and I'm going to save his fireside seat.
So this is a fast forward from the China White's night.
Absolutely
this,
right.
This is
after years of friendship and kind of, I thought you were
9 years on.
Really,
I thought you were up near an arse. And at the time, I was right. And it was 9 years on. Ollie had been through it all, up and down the ego. And no, I'm joking. He's a very sweet, empathetic boy.
But
a
yes.
A little bit egotistical at the time.
Anyway, many years later, we were in front of that thing, and I went, oh God. I was like, after all the ups and downs, I'm going to marry him. And that was literally that day, and we got engaged 7 months later.
Isn't it crazy to think that you knew of each other, were in each other's lives for so long, and then that shift just happens, like a light switch almost kind of goes, oh, actually, this is something different.
Absolutely right.
It's like one of those funny things, because my friend Jade, she introduced us, and she had the total of 2 gay friends. And then she was like, oh, you two should be together. And I was like, everyone says this. It doesn't work like this. Like this.
Just because they're gay.
Yeah, typical hetero. Anyway. And then, yeah, she was right. It did. It worked. I moved into your house within 3 weeks from there.
Yeah.
I'm literally like a cuckoo straight
in. Never left.
Everyone else out the nest, me in.
And that's been 5 years now.
It has been. Yeah, we were at Cheltenham actually back in March, and it was 5-year anniversary.
Yeah, it was.
Aww.
Oh.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, I must admit, it's been a very interesting 5 years.
It's been an amazing 5 years. We've learned a lot. We've grown a lot together. Bought a new dog.
And I know you started to you said about wanting a family on camera. Mm. But had you had that conversation at all beforehand to make you think that maybe you wouldn't? And
we hadn't. Ollie to that point was just basically saying that it was something that he wouldn't want because he wouldn't want the heartache of it. And just this, you know, it was. I think what happened was. a lot of people around us started having kids.
Yeah.
And you're living in this life, this stage in your life, and then suddenly everyone else starts moving on and you see what that is for real.
Yeah.
And you're a bit like, what you've made up in your head, where you're like, kids, it's a tremendous sort of responsibility. There's this worry. There's this, you know, you've got to give your entire life over to them. And then suddenly all your friends move on. You get that bit older, you get to your 30s or whatever. And then you're suddenly like, hang on a minute, I want this for myself. Because yeah. It's not that you get bored of things, but it's kind of like, what more is there to life? And then I think it's such a fundamental thing to be able to have a kid and raise a kid. And if it's important to you and if it's something you want to do, I think you suddenly switch and then you're like, I want this for me. And I think that's what happened.
So I'm godfather to Binky Felstead's first daughter, India. And I remember the first time I brought you over to meet India, and well, you knew Binky a bit before.
Mm.
And I watched you playing with India. And I remember sitting there being like, I just can't imagine you not being a father.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be. This is something that is ingrained in your body, that you are that good with children. And then I had that whole switch in my mind to go, oh my goodness, this is something that actually we could do. We're allowed to do it. We can do it. Let's try and start on the adventure. And oh, what an adventure it's been to try and get there. But that was the first day I remember being like, oh my goodness, I think we are going to try and be fathers because you have to be one.
That's very sweet. I think you've said that to me before. But yeah, I do love kids. I was just I've actually just been made godparent to my friend Jace, not over here time. I made godfather to her son Jamie, and I hadn't spent that much time because obviously COVID and stuff. She had a baby, and this kid's gonna be a big part of my life. So I'd be down every morning, like at 8, doing like stickers in the book, going through it, and then she's like, all right, new page, and then just sort of playing around and things like that. And it's just, you know, I think when I was about 28, I got to the point where I was like, God, I'd really love to have kids.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just being around, especially close friends, and then you see them with their kids, or like my brother, he's had a daughter and a son, and then you see them and these kids that are incredibly close to you. It's something that you just have to give a lot of love over to.
Yeah. Because
it's really enjoyable. And it's something that, yeah, from a young age, I've sort of been like, I want this, but if I don't have this because I'm gay and my partner might not want them, or, you know, it might be difficult, like it has been for us with IVF, we might not be able to afford it. It's something that I want to enjoy, you know, through other people's kids that are close to me.
Yeah. So when you had both decided that that's what you wanted in your future, what was the next step? How did you decide that IVF was the route for you?
Goodness me, where to start this?
God, it's a massive education. There's so many pit holes and just it's such a grey area, isn't it?
Trying to find the information of where to go with surrogacy is a minefield.
Especially in the UK.
They haven't changed the laws in 35 years. And it's almost like the government sit there and go, oh, you can get married, you can do that, but we're going to make it as hard as you possibly can to have children. And so anyway, the difficulties behind that are wild. But one of the big laws in the UK is that you're not allowed to see the face of the egg donor.
Right.
At all. And so we are our babies that are growing right now. We haven't seen the face. We just have a couple of, we know the eye colour, hair colour, complexion. That's basically it. We decided we wanted to go against that slightly and go to America to try and do it, because then we can actually meet them if we wanted to. We meet the egg donor and find out who they are. And yet we couldn't get in because it was COVID.
Yeah.
And so we did it in Mexico.
Right.
We had a Brazilian egg donor that came up to Mexico to give her eggs, and that was all great. And then
through an egg donating agency in LA, wasn't it?
Yeah. And we were very lucky.
Yeah.
That we had been on the show, and a few lovely angel women had contacted us saying they'd love to help us on our journey to become parents. And so we met a few, and we found this lovely, lovely, lovely lady down in the West Country. And she came out to Mexico with us, and it was just heaven. And it was just we spent 6 weeks out there.
We spent seven weeks in Mexico.
And
I was like,
oof. And so we came home, and we were all excited. And hopefully that was the situation. We put two eggs in as well. And it didn't work.
There was a bit of naivety to it, wasn't there? Because basically...
Yeah, I think we're open enough to say that as well.
Oh,
it was naivety.
We went down the route and we went to the best doctors. We had an amazing friend, Sophie Beresina. She had this amazing doctor in Harley Street. So we started with him. Then we go to the best clinics. You go to the best egg donors. All of this, everything checks out perfectly. And you think it's just literally this sort of additional thing.
And I've got to say, I think there is that whole thing of let's chuck money at it and it will all fall into place and all be absolutely fine. And actually what you've experienced is it's not the case.
Getting pregnant, even if it's natural, it's IVF, it's whatever, it's not the easiest thing. It's biology.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be many different things that you don't know what's going on with the body. You don't know if the egg donor's a match for us. You don't know whatever. And these things are simply like it isn't you go to the best and it happens. It's a process.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen immediately for people a lot of the time. And it is a journey. And actually at the time, and to be honest with you, we were sharing all because we don't know any different. We put the thing to make reality TV and all our lives and what the work we do respectful is you give everything over.
Yeah.
Like we talk about the IVF. We talk about being gay. I talk about my mom's Alzheimer's illness because you represent people for stuff they don't normally want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it respectful for me.
Yeah.
So we're like, right, we'll share everything. You're making the embryos, do all of this. And people are saying to us, please do not make this look so easy. Like it doesn't happen like this. Like, for us, it didn't happen third, fourth, fifth time, whatever. Then we found out live on a Chelsea scene that it hadn't worked. And it was so crushing and so monumentally upsetting. And for me, it was because Ollie was so upset and I just go into protective mode with him and I just want him to be okay.
But it is one of those things that you choose, because I always said when we started the journey, I said, I promise you, I will share every moment of this journey with you because this is something that I've done for an awfully long time. And I said to the camera crew, I said, we don't know what this is going to be like. The phone call is going to come through. We genuinely don't know if this is going to be we're pregnant or we're not. Either way, there's going to be tears.
But
I said, whatever happens, keep the cameras rolling.
And
we did.
And that's what we did.
And it was a no, unfortunately. I'm sorry that there's nothing there. And this was after an awful lot of money, seven weeks from Mexico. And
it's been about 6 months that we've been on this journey, hasn't it?
At that time, six months. Yeah.
And then suddenly after that, it was kind of like, right, what are the positives here? We've got to keep going, whatever. And then everyone's like, thank you now for sharing this because
we actually feel represented. Exactly. And also, you can't share that journey without sharing those initial bits of the hope. I think anyone, when they're going on a pregnancy journey, they have that hope of what's life going to be like. You have all those dreams. So you have to have all that lightness and all of that in there.
Yeah.
Because that is the reality. And then actually when it doesn't, you have to have that in place, I believe, to see how crushing it is when it doesn't happen.
Well, it's like the journey, isn't it? People have been on it. There's all this positivity and then suddenly there's this thing. And now, we've got that new equilibrium. It's like storytelling, isn't it?
Exactly.
And it, everyone's part of the journey. And what makes it true and realistic is the fact that we've shared it all the way along.
Yeah.
And, and now hopefully we've been able to help create a conversation around IVF and people who have struggled with it and been on a similar journey to us or, are still on the same journey, feel represented and feel like, they can get some resonance in what we've done.
Yeah. And I think it doesn't matter. You know how you were saying, that part of your journey was 6 months. And for some people it'd be like, oh, it was only 6 months. But that 6 months when you're in it. Is agonizing and long.
That was just the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Been nearly 4 years. But
even then, you can't. But talking about that point, you're like, well, that was a long chunk of time. But then actually, everything that's come after it as well. So from that 6 month point, when you've ended that first part of trying, what was the next move?
It was another 5 months, and then we went again, didn't we?
Well, that was a difficult one.
Did you take a breather?
I think we took again. We left that to the surrogate. We wanted to see how her body was. We wanted to make sure she was in the right mental position to do so.
Yeah.
And then we still had COVID going on.
So well, that was the issue.
Everything done, isn't it?
So then we were like, let's go back to Mexico, and we were about to book our flights, and then that went into the red list.
Oh God!
And so we're like, what do we do? We've got all the embryos in Mexico, so we had to fly them from Mexico to Cyprus. We couldn't bring them to the UK because we had seen the face of the embryo.
Right.
The egg donor.
Right.
So that was not a legal situation we could do. So we had to go to Cyprus. So they landed there and we went another round. And absolute joy, at 8 o'clock in the morning, we got a phone call from her in the room next door saying, come over. And she was like, I'm pregnant. And we were like, this is just the best thing we've ever heard.
It was so basically, the difficulty is with IVF, when the egg goes in.
Yeah.
So it's not like, if you get pregnant naturally and you 5 weeks and then suddenly do a pregnancy test and then you're close to the 6 weeks.
Yeah.
We are from dot.
Uh-huh.
So there's so many hurdles and so much that can go wrong in the time being. And then we've done the transfer and how many days is it? Six?
Hmm.
Six days you have to wait. And then the night before, I don't think we did. The night before, we were going to do a test, and we're going to bed. And I was like, I bet she's tested tonight, and I bet it's not positive. Although she'd tell us, and all these things going through your head. So I don't sleep at all. And the next morning, we obviously get this call, go into the room, and she is pregnant.
Is this the have you had the same surrogate the whole way?
Same surrogate. This was the
same surrogate. The first surrogate.
Right. Yeah.
However, 6 weeks later, after that 6 weeks, 2 days, sadly, we miscarried. That, and so they. Again, one of those moments in life where you, it was terribly upsetting.
I think you started to become a bit numb, didn't you?
That was our 6 week, I remember it was our 6 week scan. We'd gone down to the West Country and we walked in and we were all smiling and laughing and having a wonderful time. And there were no heartbeats. And we sat there and went, okay, don't really know what to do now. So we went for lunch and it was just a horrible, horrible, horrible day.
There is just, you know,
and that's when we did take a bit of a break.
Yeah, there's getting pregnant, and then there's, you know, having a successful pregnancy, a healthy pregnancy, mm-hmm. and all of this. And it's kind of like, what makes this thing work? You know, it's, and as I said before, it's biology. It's like components coming together that even the doctor won't think about, mm-hmm. and you just have to leave it, you know, up to fate at that stage, and you just have to. It's easy to say now, have a thick skin about it. I've been through the emotional rollercoaster of it, and it is like an entire grieving process.
Yeah.
And I mean, before the last time we did it, there was a sort of pit in me. It was just like, is this ever going to happen for us? And you know, the second time we had a miscarriage, then we had a bit of a break, and then the third time, and then obviously the fourth time we have been successful. And that's why I'm like, I'm tenterhooks the entire time. Yeah. I'm like 20 weeks. And I'm like, it's less than 1% chance that you could miscarry at this stage. But, you know, every scan, I'm like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, what's going to go?
I think, so I had a miscarriage, my first pregnancy had a miscarriage. And I think what that does is it takes away the innocence that you might have going into a pregnancy. Because it is that every day, every toilet trip, you're just waiting. Yeah. You're waiting for something to go wrong. And even, you know, I can remember the 23 mark for me being like the... We're so close now, you know. Mm. We're viable, but I don't think it. And that's all three pregnancies, you know. Following that, I think it stayed with me right until the end.
Yeah.
I think it is that it robs you of looking at it in an innocent way.
But it really, it's a horrible feeling. But God, there is nothing more ratifying that you want to be a parent more than that.
Yeah.
It's this sense of worry about loss of something that already. I mean, I'm obsessed with my dogs. God knows what I'm going to be like with my kids.
And yes, we've always said that. And they say it's 100 times more love for your child. And you're like, well, this is going to be extraordinary. This is going to be exhausting. I was like, we love our dogs so much.
We're out on Sunday. We've only been out for an hour. I was like, I'm going to get home because I miss the dogs. I'm just like, what is wrong with me? But equally, that sense of worry, like, and the fact that people now talk about it. Like, my mum had a miscarriage between my brother and I, and that was back in like the 80s, and people did not talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you take on this incredible sense of responsibility, but it's not. It is, as I said before, biology. And when it's right, it's right. And you have to have that mentality, otherwise it will kill you. It will literally eat you up.
Did you allow yourselves time to grieve that loss? And did you both grieve differently?
I didn't cry. And that was something that I wasn't expecting, because I am a crier. And I think I had cried so much the first time, I think I was just in kind of numbed abyss for a year or so, where I was, going out, having some drinks, having a lovely time, and basically living a life that was a little bit numb. And that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was doing everything I possibly could. You were existing, but you weren't feeling the emotions you often do, because you are numb to it.
Yeah.
And because all you know at that point, all you want is those babies. And it takes such a long time to try and get there. And that's exactly what it was. I was living a half life.
It was, I must say, for the three and a bit years we've been trying to do this, the first time you don't get it and suddenly you've got this expectation about how your life's going to play out,
yeah.
It does feel like everything's on pause.
Yeah,
like it was a stasis, and then when we're now at this final stage, it finally feels like actually our lives can go forward a bit more.
Yeah,
it's a bit like when Hugh Grant has the seasons going past when he's trying to get over Julia Roberts in Notting Hill, and suddenly the seasons go past and everyone's getting on with their business and stuff like that, and suddenly at the end Hugh's the same person, but seasons have gone on. It felt like that, I think, for us.
I think grief when it comes to a loss and miscarriage. I know that for Tom, my husband, he only processed the miscarriage once Buzz had arrived. So it kind of that
interesting
almost it was that this is literally holding our baby in his arms and going, this is actually what we lost, you know, and even though you've got a baby that you're that's so longed for and loved, it kind of just makes sense of what that was, I think, because it was happening to my body. So for him, it felt, you know, I have to make sure that she's okay. And actually it made sense afterwards, I think.
Yeah, I think when you take stock of it, and I appreciate that, you've got the baby.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like right now, you've got that sort of fulfillment. And it's kind of like, let's actually look at this and assess it, which is actually a really lovely way to think about it, because it just shows so much caring.
Yeah.
And my sister always says that she had a miscarriage in between her first and second child. And she always looks at her baby now and goes, I know that's the baby that was meant to be there.
Yeah.
Like that's absolutely, she feels that it's got the soul of what that baby was going to be.
Yeah.
It's just the outside wasn't right at the
time. Yeah. That's a gorgeous way of looking at it. Mm. So after the miscarriage, you then went again?
Yes.
Was there a change in the situation at that point?
Yeah, well, we had some advice from doctors saying that maybe the surrogate and your sperm and the egg weren't working as well. So we started having a quick look and speaking to people about other surrogate situations.
Yeah.
And
which must be really difficult as well to end a journey with a surrogate when you've already been on such a, you know, a big emotional journey together.
I mean, yeah. And it's you know, we kind of, what is right? What's the right thing to do? And what's the fair thing to do? Because you can't just keep going through the same situation. And it's something we took about a year, 8 months.
Yeah.
It's quite a while to go through it.
And also, it's hard on all of you, right? It's hard on you. It's hard on the surrogate. So it's a big thing for all of you.
Yeah, where you've got this person who wants to do this amazing thing and wants to be a surrogate for someone. It's the first time she was a surrogate for a couple. So
and she was family. She is family.
Yeah, yeah.
She always will be in our lives, I hope. And then this other lady came about and said, we'd like to help. And again, we went through that. That was last year. We went through our first round with her and... We were in Bali filming and we got a positive test. And we were so excited. There's new eggs and new sperm, everything. It was fabulous. And we got a positive pregnancy test. And then throughout the week, it just went less and less and less. And then it was just gone. So we went, okay, let's see what we can do again. And so we waited for a couple of weeks, a month or so.
And we were quite quick after that because...
And we didn't tell anyone.
Really?
We thought, this time we're not going to tell anyone. Our parents weren't telling anyone about it.
Did you just want to remove everyone else's expectation?
It was kind of like, I think we'd shared everything to that point. And then I was kind of a bit like, I was in Bali, so I got a bit woo-woo and basically start wearing evil eyes. And being like, no, I don't want anyone's negative opinions on this and maybe that's affecting it. But I was just like, look, let's not have the stress. We weren't filming at that time, so it's not something that would have been shared anyway. And we're like, actually... It tracks here that we would just go and do this, take the pressure off the surrogate, deal with this. It's even like, even telling our family, and it's been like, is it happening? Or even Oliver's mother wanted to come up when it was the first, which scan? 12-week scan. We hadn't told everyone until 6 weeks. 12-week scan. And I was a bit like, just in case anything's wrong, let's just not, because let's just have it, the three of us, what it has to be. But
we did it before Christmas. And we kept silent about it, and we just waited, and then we were skiing, and we got a pretty wonderful phone call.
Oh, that was what scan was that? Six-week scan.
So, how did you feel finding out that there was a positive pregnancy to start with after following all the losses?
When we got the positive pregnancy test in Bali, and we were all excited. When we decided not to tell anyone the next round we were going, there was a. In my eyes especially, and I did say this on the show, but I felt this inordinate embarrassment and shame, and I felt like I was mortified, and I didn't want to tell my father. That was one thing I don't mind about telling mum, but my dad, I felt demasculated. I felt emasculated. I felt like I wasn't the man I should be. And I know that sounds really silly, but it's something that it's like, why can't I have a child? Why, I'm trying so hard. Is it my sperm? What's wrong with it? Like, why can't we get there? It's all of our sperms. I don't know what's happening. And I think that was something that broke my heart slightly. At that point, I think we said, let's not tell anyone.
I was fully on the woo-woo track of just not having evil eyes on me.
For me, it was embarrassment. And also, when our parents find out, whatever like that, suddenly the papers find out, whatever like that, and suddenly you've got Google alerts saying oh, devastated, it hasn't happened again and stuff. And you go, God, I just really don't want this again.
The parents find out in the papers. Do you think your mother's the leak?
And it was just heartbreaking. Anyway, then we did get that fabulous phone call saying that things had gone right.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Was there a hesitation to enjoy it, or were you able
to? Absolutely. I mean, even till we got to week 12, I was on a stasis of being like, you're almost in denial. Like we hadn't got to 6 weeks. We got to 6 weeks, 2 days. We had a scan at 7 weeks the second time we got pregnant. So we'd miscarried. There was just a sac left and then was miscarried.
This time, I think we've had a scan every week since.
Oh, God, literally, this is... I don't know whether this is just because my anxiety would be through the roof. But anyway, we get to 6 weeks, there's twins, right? And we'll tell you the story of how that all came out in a minute. And then we got to 9 weeks, and our surrogate had a fall. So right. She's gone in for a scan, and I'm like, well, we're done for. And this is... I'm the unluckiest person in the world. This is all perfect. Week 10, had to have a Harmony test. So another scan.
Yeah.
Week 11, another scan for some reason. Week 12, the 12-week scan. All of this. So it was kind of like, right, okay, great. I'm getting to about day five in the week, two nights of anxiety, mm-hmm. then we've got a scan. Brilliant. And then back to front. And so I'm on this like journey. Otherwise, if it was like 4 weeks apart each time, I'd probably be pulling my hair out by week two.
But yes, we've had scans almost every week now, which has been... heavenly in lots of ways, because it's been you get to see the babies are absolutely fine and they are doing really well. And at that point, we did find out it was a boy and a girl, and we did find out live on camera.
So, well, let's rewind to the moment that you found out you were having twins. Because did that even enter your mind at any point on this journey? We know it happens, but you know, it's an egg split situation. It's not it's not two embryos put in.
Well, this was actually two embryos put in.
Yeah.
So this is different.
It's because obviously this is our fourth time, and we're with the London Women's Clinic, and she basically said, look, there's no way about it. We have to put two in.
Really?
They were like, I think you need to do this. This is advice being like, I think you need to do this now. It's your fourth round. It's been 3 years. Like we are going to do this now.
Wow.
Which is very rare in England. They don't do that very often.
Yeah.
I think it's just because it's been the fourth time. I think even by the second time they start suggesting it, but it wasn't until the fourth time.
That they were like, we're doing
this. Of course. My mind's gone funny. Of course. Then they're a boy and a girl. They're not identical.
Right.
It's yeah.
But also, to have a boy and a girl is a. We sat there and we're like, oh my God, twins. They've actually both worked for the first time. Like, it's not 100% going to happen with one embryo, let alone two.
So, did you find out it was twins at a scan?
Well, what were we doing? You can tell this.
We were skiing. Of course. And
I'm terribly responsible. Don't we weren't at the scan at all.
So we had gone away before starting the new series to have a bit of a chill. And we were... Gareth decided we knew it was going to happen that morning, that scan. Unbearable anxiety.
Oh, I'm highly strung. So I basically was like, right, I can't just sit at home and not concentrate. So I was like, I'm going off on my own and just went skiing hard. I covered about 10 miles in the morning.
I had managed to down a bottle of red wine the night before or two to try and numb that so I could wake up a little bit later, so it was close to the midday scan mark. Right.
Ollie woke up and I wasn't there. He went ballistic at me.
I was like, where are you? He was like, skiing. I was like, oh, wait, anyway, so I was on the way there.
I couldn't just sit there.
I knew this phone call was going to come, and I had this lovely Irish guy to my left who was driving us in a big van, and a guy in the back that I'd never met before who was English. And the phone rang, and I said, guys, I'm so sorry, just to let you know, there's going to be tears either way here. I was like, don't think I'm mad. I'm just finding out whether we've got children or not. It's just a small thing in life. And so I sat there, put it on, and I've got the video because I recorded it, and she basically sat there and was like, there's two. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, I turned around, and the Irish guy next to me, who had never met from the guy, they both kind of hugged me, and I was like, thank you so much, random strangers. You're so kind. You know this before my family or my husband.
Or me, yeah. Because I'm also, typically, I'm being a bit of an idiot, and basically we're an hour ahead in France. So yeah. I'm like, oh, it's 11 o'clock, the scan's meant to be happening. And I'm like panicking, half an hour's gone past, I'm wrong, Ollie. It's like, we're an hour ahead, calm down. And then she got there, and then she needed a bladder full of pee.
Oui.
Yeah.
Pee. I was going to say water. It's not. It's pee. And then, so then that took a bit longer. So then it wasn't until about 1 o'clock that we found out, and we meant to find out at 11.
Right.
So 1 o'clock UK time, just in case you're wondering. And then, yeah, so by this point, I've drunk a beer because I'm just worrying. I'm with one of my friends from the show. And then I'm on a chairlift and Ollie's found out. And then my phone's just vibrating in the pocket.
How many times? I reckon 6 times I called you.
At least. No.
And you would not pick up. And I was like, I need to tell someone apart from this random, lovely Irish guy to my left.
I would have dropped my phone and then you wouldn't have been able to tell me at all.
See, well, you just sat there going, oh my God, it's ringing, but I can't pick it up.
I sort of knew by the fact he rang me once. And I was like, right, if it's one ring, and I'm just playing out this entire thing in my head, if it's one ring, it's not worked. And then the second one came, then the third, then the fourth. And I was like, okay, he's excited now.
Yeah.
So I get to the top and then I'm like speaking to him. And then Ollie's basically just blubbering down the phone to me, as he would, blessed. And he's like, we're pregnant. I was like, right, okay. And then with the baby. And I was like, right, okay. And then in my head, I was like, right, okay. It's one, fine. That's fine. And I'd sort of thought in my head and made up this entire thing where I was getting these two boys and all of this.
Yeah, you sounded quite disappointed when I said we're pregnant. You were like, oh.
Yeah, because I thought you just said it was one. And then I was like, hang on, it could have been two. And in my head, I'm like, I'm going to have a second child. So I grew up with a brother. You grew up with a sister. We didn't want just an only child. So
I was like, no, it's two.
And then...
It's two. And you're like, what?
And then that's when I was like shaking. I think I actually dropped my phone. I'm basically dyspraxic at this point on the stage, dropping things.
In a very bougie way, I said, I'll meet you at the Folly Douche in about 10 minutes.
And then I'm with my friend Emily, and then I've told her, and then she's crying, then I'm crying, then I put goggles on, then they're steaming up, and I can't see my way down. It's a bit cloudy. I'm like, God, I'm not actually going to make it to the restaurant.
So we love the idea of our lives being rom-coms, and it does feel like that sometimes when you're walking down Embankment crying on Made in Chelsea. But that's how we've tried to live it, and it was. We saw each other for the first time in Folly Douche, all dressed in our thing. There was champagne on the table, already waiting, and we sat there, and we were like, we're pregnant, and everyone was around us, and it was just the most gorgeous thing.
It's quite funny because everyone's reaction is so genuine, because we're like the fathers to the group that we're in, especially mm-hmm. we're away filming with some of the Chelsea Dot, and everyone sort of comes to us for advice. We're not in the drama. We're just kind of like, you know, wise old owls.
Yeah.
Everyone
comes. It's a nice position to be.
Yeah, it is.
Does help.
Yeah, brilliant. Not making up and breaking up, thank God. And so we've just got this sort of bond with everyone. And then I think just everyone is sort of behind us in terms of they're still getting into their relationships, not having kids, and everyone's sort of putting all this energy onto us, and everyone is so genuinely excited for us. So we got to that restaurant and it was just amazing. I think I cried for 5 hours. And then we're ringing everyone, we've rung the surrogate, and then at this stage we're telling everyone we're pregnant because a lot of people don't know.
Right.
I don't think they did at all, did they? My family didn't know.
No, no.
You probably told yours because you're...
And did you tell everyone it was twins to start with?
Yes, I think so.
I think we said there was a possibility of twins. So you know, we like putting pressure on ourselves.
Yeah, I think we did say that. And now, as we're saying, it's 20 weeks now. 20 weeks. And there's a boy and a girl, and they're both incredibly happy. And what we can't wait more than anything in the world is to just welcome them into this wild adventure of what their lives will be.
Yeah.
And they are already so unbelievably loved, not just by us. And what's amazing is having gone through this journey... We're very lucky that we have been on this show that I thought was going to last for 6 months and have now been on for 13 years. When we put our wedding on camera, we got married on the 4th of November 2020 in the Natural History Museum under the Whale.
Beautiful, by the way. Absolutely beautiful.
And it was watched by 3.5 million people, which is... we beat Strictly that night. just the most for an E4 show is just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And it's the highest ever watched episode of Chelsea by about six times. And it was so fabulous, but so many people, I think, were so invested in our journey that walking out of this studio right now, I guarantee you, by getting to the car, someone will say congratulations. Mm. And they're loved by all of those people as well, all of the fabulous people that have invested in our world and the people that have actually kept us going an awful lot when you're in the Sainsbury's queue or whatever like that, and you're feeling a bit of a crappy day and someone taps you on the shoulder being like, you'll get there, darling. And you go, well, that's what...
Has that also added an element of pressure, though? Because you know so many people are waiting for that good news.
When it didn't work the third time, I just had this thing being like, is it ever going to work? And then what does that mean? And is it just... Because we had that sort of like, we're at the gate, we're waiting to go, but you couldn't go.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, then what happens to our life if we never achieve this? Does it affect us for the rest of our life? And, you know, everyone knows that we're trying to do this. And it would have had a really sad note if we never got there, you know, and never had the opportunity to have kids. So the pressure coming from that just being like, what does that make of this if it doesn't happen?
Yeah. And I feel like there's also that whole thing of, you know, don't tell anyone you're pregnant until 12 weeks because, you know, you never know. But actually, that shuts off such a large part of your life that's really scary.
Isolating.
And isolating. It's, you know, I think a miscarriage is the biggest and most isolating grief you can ever go through, especially because of that whole old thing, I think. I think it's a very old thing of just keeping it to yourself, not sharing it. And actually, I think the more those conversations are shared and had, the better. Because it means that when you are in it, you're not feeling embarrassed. You're not feeling like you've... Like, I felt like I'd completely and utterly failed in my first attempt of being a mum, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the more you have those conversations, it alleviates that for other people. Or it helps, I think, have those conversations that maybe other people can't have, you know, maybe because they can't find the words or, you know, the people around them aren't in, you know, that space that they can have those conversations. So, I highly... commend you really for sharing the your journey in the way that you have.
I think we had some practice before by breakups and love and romance and all that for all those years kind of thing. And I think putting things on camera seemed it would be a disservice. It would be something.
It'd be a disservice to us in doing what we do. As I said before, what makes what we do respectable is you put it all out there. You put it all on the line, and it's no holds barred. Because if you start to reserve stuff and you start to curate it, it's dishonest.
Yeah,
and that's not true to life.
Yeah,
and as you're saying, like the fact that you wouldn't say that you're having a kid before 12 weeks, and if you go through a miscarriage and on your own,
yeah,
like we talk about mental health these days. Like people process things in different ways, and some people need to talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. Some people might internalize it. Yeah. Fine, it's up to them. But the fact that you're able to be like, this is life, this is what happens, and this is the emotion we're going through, and you give it all over completely raw, it's the only way I would find doing this respectable.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you find that you're having a boy and a girl straight away? At that 12-week?
No, we found out on camera. Again.
Oh, did you? That's fine. That's the lives we're living.
Yep. It's kind of weirdly what we do.
We went for a scan with the surrogate, and it was a 3D scan, and our production found out then what it was. It was in an envelope.
Right.
And I, for the entire thing, I was like, I want two boys. I grew up with a brother. I was like, I want my rugby players. I want this. My brother's a professional rugby player. I was made to play rugby. I hated it. But for some reason, I want to repeat the trauma.
I'm not children.
Yeah. I'm going to repeat the trauma. But then the week before we'd found out, in my mind, I was like, hang on a minute. If I don't have a girl... I'm not going to have that, because in my head at this point, I'm not having a third child. We'll probably have another five, but we're not having a third child. So I was like, and then I started thinking, I just want to have that experience. And then I was a bit like, oh God, no. I sort of like then started romanticizing about having a girl and then the boy and then growing up together. And then it not being these two little twins boys, because we're a household of boys. We've got two boy dogs. We're obviously both men. And it was kind of just like, let's just chuck in this random element of a girl and then it'd just be amazing.
Yeah.
And then how do we find out? We found out we were filming somewhere off Farm Girl Street, weren't we?
Yeah, we were filming, and then our surrogate walked in and said, there's an envelope for you. And they said, Gareth, which one do you want?
Baby A and baby B. I snatched baby A.
And it was a girl. And,
no, I had a boy.
Sorry, yeah, you opened. Yeah, you.
So we unfolded this piece of paper. You couldn't look through. I've got the two envelopes. I hold them like trying to see beforehand, but couldn't. opened up this thing, and I was like, "It's a boy," and I was like, "It's two boys. It's two boys." And I looked to Oles, and he's like being really coy, and I was like, "Hang on a minute."
I was like, "We're having a boy and a girl." And I was like, "This is. We haven't even seen this yet. We haven't. It's not out on Chelsea
really?
Yet. So no. We haven't seen it." But again, quite a monumental moment. We found out we're having a girl. That is a in life. That is a big moment.
Yeah.
Right. And we'd always talked about two boys, hadn't we? Throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, absolutely right. We've always thought it'd be two boys. We had our both boys' names. We'd absolutely.
So how was that finding out about a girl? Because I think there is. That gender is such a massive thing. And I think so often in pregnancy, so my sister-in-law is pregnant at the moment, and literally everyone's like, it's this. You don't know, it's 50-50, you know. But I think because it's now in her head, she's having one thing, you know, you understand when people feel like slightly taken aback by a different gender, you know.
Every psychic had told me two boys as well, just saying. It's me being woo-woo back from Bali. Three said it was going to be two boys. Wrong.
Well, unless the scan's slightly wrong, we've just got one with a really, really small willy.
Maybe.
It could well be like
that. I think it's not just based off genitalia.
There's other stuff.
More scientific.
There's more. Yeah.
But who knows?
Who knows? But
someone's got to have my genes.
Sure. But it's quite fun because it's just chaotic. We don't have any feminine energy in the house really at the moment, so it's going to just really like throw that in.
No, I think we definitely need some more because we're such lads.
Such lads, so masculine.
Lads.
Yeah.
We.
But yes, again, now we've gone and Gareth's worked in fashion for 100 million years and we have been going around doing some shopping and that has become an addiction.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, no.
That has become a real, real trouble.
Have you got a lot of things already? Are you sorted? Have you already got like the nursery and stuff sorted out?
We've had so much stuff turn up. Really? And I have no idea what it is. What is a fluffy foot warmer? I don't know what that is.
I don't know.
There you can have it, mate.
There was just like puffy cube. And I don't think the puffy cube can't even fit a baby on it. So I'm like, what is this for? And then also we had this lovely lady round called Anita. Being like, right, this is what you need for the house. Then our house is over five floors. So like, right, changing table and everything. And I'm thinking, changing tables. I'm on IKEA. Looking, I'm like, not aesthetically pleasing. So I say to Anita, I've seen this beautiful antique butcher's block, which actually probably worked for the right height. Anita looked at me like I had told her, like I was going to really sail up the river in a Moses basket. She literally looked mortified at me. I was like, oh, it would have looked fantastic in the kitchen. It's a changing table. I thought it was quite innovative. So, yeah, it's a bit daunting.
Essentially, you just need a changing mat and a bag in each floor, really.
Absolutely.
You'll be,
I mean, yes.
You didn't get the IKEA table for every floor.
No, not the butcher's block. I got the beautiful antique. It's never been used, it's fine.
But no, we do have the most enormous collection of stuff arriving in our house at the moment. And the clothes, I must admit,
I bought them their Easter outfits for 2024.
You have?
Matt, you bought the Christmas outfits.
Christmas outfits. I don't even know how big they're going to be or what's going to be going on, but, you know, if they're going to be wearing jumpers in summer if they don't fit into them during Christmas. I'll tell you that for free.
They are.
Hey, you've got five embryos left. Like, come on. There's going to be hand-me-downs galore. You've got more children
absolutely.
To get through.
Absolutely. And they are Ralph Lauren commercials right now. They look like... That's very much as my style is, that kind of Hamptons preppy, kind of all of that kind of style, rugby shirts. And they are both little versions of us. They are going to be very sweet, but they...
They've got on or off a boat somewhere. They look very cute.
Aww.
It's so sweet. I'm obsessed. And then you go and you buy kids' clothes and it's just like, and it's just never ending because it gets so much more exciting.
Again, it's part of the joy of it. Go and have fun with it. We've had difficult parts. Let's go and have some fun. Go around and pick some fabulous thing. Go, ooh, every single thing and smell it and hold it and feel the material. Fabulous.
You're waiting. And what can you do when you're waiting? That, you know, you've got to fill it in a way that makes you happy. You've had 4 years of thinking about how you're going to parent. Now it's that time where you can start getting those nice bits.
I think after the 16 week scan, it got to that point where it's like, right, this is, you know, we're pretty much there, this is happening now. And then it's a bit like, let's do something really positive.
And we are 4 months to go to the day right now until the babies are, as long as they want to stay until 37 weeks, this is to the day. So we're like, okay, we actually need to get cracking because that's going to go very, very quickly.
We're well over halfway through because it's twins. They come out at 37 because it's multiple birth. But there's a 30% chance they could come before. So, you know, we're just...
So let's get cracking.
And how are you feeling about the arrival? Like, about going into that situation of your, you know, are they arriving by C-section?
Yes. Yeah.
So how are you feeling about looking ahead to being in that room? You know, is it...
It's going to be nerve-wracking, isn't it? It's always going to, and it's just going to be more and more, and it's kind of like, it's, I don't know how to explain it.
If I'm honest, I haven't really, again, it's a step-by-step situation going
through. We've got our 20-week scan, no, 21-week on Tuesday this week, and then obviously we had a scan last week, that's because we do it every week, and it's kind of just... Even though it's 16 weeks away, it still doesn't feel that close.
Yeah.
But I just...
Does it feel close enough?
Yeah. But it's exciting. Like, we're looking at, what are they called? The sleeper cots. Cots, what, the ones going next to our bed?
Snood.
And then I'm like, I'm reading about colic and like these little things you have up and like makes it all better. And I'm like planning, and already I go to bed at night. I'm like, right, one's going to be there, one's going to be there. And then, you know, I'll get up in the night, do a dream feed, all of this sort of thing. See, I know some of the terms.
Yeah.
I haven't even done NCT yet. I've read a book.
Are you doing NCT?
Yeah, we will.
Doing the bunk class.
Do you know, the thing for me is just the medical side, like all the sort of, you know, all the just if anything goes wrong or whatever.
And the baby first aid and things like that.
Yeah, because...
I think imperative, no? That would be, I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we live, because we're in Chelsea, just around the corner from Chelsea Westminster, so otherwise I'm just going to be neurotic all the time and just be like... Both babies under arms, running down to the hospital. But like, one's got a cough. It's like, go home. but yeah, it's. I mean, it's just. Where does the worry stop?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Oh God, I need medication on something. Already my anxiety's up. Woo.
But that is something Mum always goes, well, this is it now. You'll always worry till they're
yeah,
well,
you
forever.
Never stop.
The trade-off is love, though, isn't it? I mean, the fact is that, you know, I think ahead to when they're going off to, you know, finish school, going off to uni, when they first, their first boyfriend, their first
Let's
girlfriend.
Get them born first.
I know, but it's just such a romantic thing, isn't it? Yeah. I think about my upbringing. I had such an amazing upbringing. And I, funny enough, my dad filmed the other day for the first time for this new pilot that we're doing. I filmed with him, and I was just like, Christ, you're just such an amazing dad. I'm an emotional blood-ring wrestler.
I did burst
into tears. I was talking about my mum, so it obviously makes me upset. But I was like, I hope I could be half the dad you were. And it's like, I wasn't that good a dad. I was like, yeah, you were. Like, through the tears. And then I'm just thinking about my upbringing and then like all those monumental moments. And I'm just like, God, the worry and all of that, the trade-off is we get that. You know, we get to have all these moments. And it's just, I'm just so excited to have a family. It's going to be so much fun.
I just, for me, it's something that is... I think after all of this time, it's the most enormous adventure that we want to bring these two fabulous things into the world and to let them just have this wild adventure. And this is where life starts.
Yeah.
A lot of people say to me, and always have done, my friend Richard always says, as soon as you have a baby, you're no longer the lead character in your own book.
So true.
And I've never wanted to be the second character more in my entire life. This is their journey now.
Mm.
And this is a lucky enough position that we can sit there and try and guide them through as best we can.
I think that's like back to when you said about the boarding school thing in the beginning. And it's kind of like, do you want those like pauses throughout life? And that's when I was thinking about it. I was like, God, no, I don't want these kids to board. I want them with us all the time because it's going to be such a monumental thing. Like, how old were you when you went and boarded? 8.
I think I was 9.
9. Okay. So like, imagine then you've done this for 9 years and suddenly this thing's gone. And then you're like, I'd feel like, what am I going to do for 5 days? I'm going to just twiddle my thumbs and miss my kids, you know? And that's why. And now it's just like, and that's overarching all of this, talking about buying the clothes, talking about this journey, the anxiety, all of that. All I really want is a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I want that for us. And I just want that, you know, that closeness, what I had, which I grew up with. I want to replicate what I grew up with. And that's what I can't wait for.
Thank you. I absolutely love that. And the other thing that will have a massive effect on is you as a couple. Because it's a whole new, you know, adventure that you're leaping into together.
Yeah. How am I without sleep?
Not great.
But you know it. And I think self-awareness is the biggest thing when it comes to, you know, working things out as a couple. If you know you're not good, that's great.
I'm like a narcoleptic. I can just sleep everywhere, can't I? You absolutely frustrate yourself.
Yes, you do. You fall asleep in 30 seconds. I wake up every single day between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m.
Really?
Yeah, which drives me insane. Every single morning, including this morning. And so he goes, "You're right." And I said, "He goes, oh, it's witching hour." And I'm sitting there, yeah, wake up on my phone. So I'm getting used to waking up in the middle of the night anyway. Yeah. So it's fairly all right.
That's so fine. You can do the night.
I don't mind doing that.
No, it's fine. Actually, you know what? The night before, I went downstairs and let the dog out for a wee.
Well, I'm very proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, if you could write a letter on fatherhood or on being a parent, who would it be to and what would you say?
I think definitely to myself 3 years ago when we're going on this journey and just being like, and it was just that last time where I just had this pit of like, this isn't going to happen for us. So, you know, it was such a short time, but you just feeling like you're on pause that entire time.
Yeah.
And also just to your younger self, I think, is always going to be important because you mature so much. Like, you know, when you get to that point, you're like, right, I want to settle down now. Right, I want to get married, like all this sort of stuff. And it's just kind of like, I think especially to myself, like I didn't come out until I was quite, my dad when I was 28.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was dating. Wait, was I dating? Just before I started dating, I was my boyfriend before for a couple of years and didn't work out, obviously. He's not still around.
No, we're still together.
And I think, yeah, if I think about it, do you know what? I would be like writing a letter to myself being like, look, not only you'd be able to come out, because I thought I'd just have to stay in the closet my entire life and I'd never get to that point and I couldn't live the life I wanted to live, yeah? Because you make up this big thing in your head. I sort of realised I was gay from like 14, 15 years old. So you create this entire narrative and story in your head, how it all plays out, how you're going to be on your own and all of that stuff. My mum got ill and then I was a bit like, hang on a minute, you got one life, go and live it how you want. If everything falls away, it's not meant to be. And then, you know, fast forward down the line, I'm married to the love of my life, we're about to have kids. Like, the way that I saw this happening when I was younger was a lot lonelier than where I am now.
Yeah.
And my life is full and my family are so incredibly close, so incredibly loving. And it's a lesson to myself ratifying the fact that the love that my family have for me is inconsequential. I could do anything and it doesn't go away. It really is unconditional.
Yeah.
And I think probably if I think about it, that would be, you know, the it's not even the finish line. Well, you know, we're not even halfway through the race, but, you know, getting to this point in the race, it really does look a lot better than I thought it was going to.
Yeah. Lovely.
I think for me, I have a friend who came out at 19 and his parents sent him away to Utah to go to a conversion therapy camp. Ironically, this is the first time he had sex with a man.
What did they expect?
Absolutely right. Came home and said to his parents that he was still gay and they kicked him out and have never spoken to him ever again. And he was 19 years old. He's gone on to become a billionaire and has been one of the most extraordinary men you will ever meet through pure dedication to prove to himself that being different is an asset in whatever manner. My letter would be to any person out there, to any parent who thinks that their child being different is a disadvantage, when I think that actually it is something more to be celebrated, to be different, whether in whatever manner they're assets, they are assets in themselves, in whatever they are. Kindness, I think, is just the most important thing. And I genuinely believe that parents out there need to realise, a lot of parents out there need to realise that your child being different is such a fabulous thing. I look back at my own school life and the most popular kids right now are not the most popular kids.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the people that are different are the most successful and the ones that are going through life in the most fabulous way. And I think it's a very, very good omen to be just a little bit different and to sometimes not fit in, because I think fitting in then sometimes means that it's... not fitting in then means that one day life is going to fit in with you much better than you'd ever imagine.
Yeah.
And what a joy.
Yeah. And to warm yourself up into this new role, you've become a children's author.
Absolutely right, yes.
Tell me more.
Now, this has become something that I have loved for such a long time. The idea of a bedtime story for me is just wonderful. And the idea we get to do that...
Is it something that you really look forward to the having that moment of closeness and storytelling? And
he does all the voices anytime he reads a book. Of course he's looking forward to it.
Absolutely. I just think it's such a wonderful thing to be a part of. Fantasy and magic and all that kind of stuff before you go to bed, before you go off to the land of Nod, before you go off in your own dreams and your own adventures where your imagination takes over and you are your own storyteller when you're going through your dreams. And so I came up with a little character called Henry Boggett, mm-hmm. who's a little boy who finds magic in London by realising the blue plaques in the walls where people used to live are actually portals back into their world.
I love this. When That's I read so that, I don't know how this hasn't been done before, because it's such a beautiful idea to be able to leap into their world.
I am so beyond excited about this. And this, the first one is Henry Boggett, Faraway Adventures of Henry Boggett and the Great White Whale. So he goes back to 1851 into Nantucket and goes into the world of Moby Dick through Herman Melville's plaque. And it's just a glorious story where Henry always becomes the protagonist, a part of the story as if he always was. What's great about this series of books is we're doing two a year. And so we're doing one every April and one every October, carrying on. And the second one I'm so excited about as well. But the first one... out.
It's always that thing as an author, when you know what's coming next, you're like, oh, but I have to talk about what's coming first.
I know, I'm not going to tell anyone. But this is actually out today.
That's, happy publication day.
Thanks very much indeed. And so it's really exciting. And it's 5 to 8 year olds, or 5 to 10 year olds. And it's educational, but magical. And before they go to bed, it's just something that they can sit there and read and just and go into a magical world of little Henry Boggett.
And they're super accessible as well.
Yeah, super accessible for everyone. Yeah, and also I've made it so they're not hardbacks.
Yep.
And so that you can put them in the bottom of the trolley. Anywhere you want, in the buggy, you can put them anywhere you want and go travelling with them.
The other thing is there are just so many blue plaques. This is endless, Ollie.
There's 900 and something.
Whoa! I mean, some people are going to be a bit like, I don't want to dive into that one. But on the whole...
Absolutely right. I'm not sure we'll do Bob Marley's quickly. But I'm not quite sure how that would go. But there are some just heavenly ones. And also, may we add, very important ones of people that haven't been spoken about. But that is wonderful about these stories, is that you can tell it in a way that's bite-sized for children and to get them interested in old school literature. Mm-hmm. If you've ever tried to read Moby Dick, I mean, don't. It really does go on.
That's not the point. You're meant to encourage people
but
to read.
But no, it's so long and so it's so difficult to read. And so we do it in a bite size. And also do it with a bit of magic. We're doing it. The white whale is not as scary as you think he is.
I think one of the most amazing things as well is the fact that you can actually physically go to these places and see the blue plaque. What street is a blue plaque on?
Craven Street.
There we go. He knew. I was going,
thanks very much.
A little test there.
It was a little test. Aha. We'd have edited it in.
Just behind the Corinthia Hotel if you want to see.
Yeah. Nice. So these places actually exist. So it's always interesting when you can take a work of fiction and then go and physically have something in the real world, because it sort of plays, especially for kids, it really sort of, you know, it comes to
things that were alive.
Yeah, it's, what's that clock in the Natural History Museum?
Oh, it's Timmy's clock.
Something, there's a clock in
Buzzle Watch it almost 100%.
There's a BBC.
CBBC. Is it Andy?
Andy's clock, yeah. And then kids are like, I want to go and see Andy's clock.
And then it's
in the Natural History Museum. Mm-hmm. So it's a really sort of educational, motivating thing for kids. And I think that's one of the most amazing things.
Amazing. And it's beautiful.
Very, thank very you beautiful. Very, very much.
I hope you're planning on celebrating today.
Oh, I will be, 100%.
Good. We end each episode of the podcast with you completing three sentences. So I've modified the second one slightly. The first one is, being a dad means...
I think for me, being a dad means family. And the family that I knew, that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, has always been a goal.
Being a dad is letting someone else take the spotlight and letting them do whatever they want to do in their lives to make them as happy as they possibly want to be. And I think that's for me, the most important thing.
Beautiful. Since starting this journey to become a dad, I...
am skint. I...
It's not going to get any better, Ollie.
That's fine, yes, I can imagine. You need to work hard. How realised how magical the whole community of people that struggle to have children are. Mm-hmm. Because when we were struggling, they were the people, and I'm still in contact with many of them, and we're supporting each other, many from America or wherever I have never met. And yet we speak to each other, and some of those people know before my parents that we're pregnant or we were pregnant, because those are the people that were holding my hand or her hand through that. And the community online is, when you're struggling, when you need a hug, they're there, and they don't see you at that point as someone on television. They see you as someone going through the same issues they are.
Yeah.
And that, for me, was fairly magical. And so, yeah, that was that for me.
Yeah, I think, but since starting this journey, I think it's just humbling. You know, you're part of this community, and you're all on the same journey together. And it's that's the main thing that sort of keeps you sane.
Yeah, and finally, I'm happy when.
I'm happy when I'm in bed by 9. I'm happy when I'm with Ollie. I'll ring him every hour if I'm not with him, but I miss you. I want that. And we're always with each other. We're very sort of symbiotic. Symbiotic, that's the word. Sounds a bit weird. But yeah, I'm happy when I'm with Ollie.
I'm happy when I look forward to what's going to be happening in the future. If we're by the seaside or something like that, first adventures, first memories, first everything. That's I think my happiness, and that would be my happy thought if I was trying to fly in Peter Pan.
What a beautiful way of ending, and that's gorgeous. Thank you so much. I am so excited for you to have your babies in your arms, and I want you to come back, actually, you know, have a year down the line, and let's regroup.
Crying babies in here. Yeah. That'll be fun.
We've had babies in here before, don't you worry.
We'll do it.
There'll be years.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely.
Thank you.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.